ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
What's on the mind of the country's biggest, most influential, and most innovative business leaders, founders, and creators?
You're in a very pessimistic place, Alan.
You get to find out every Friday with me, Alan Kohler, as I sit down with the people influencing the markets, the economy, and the ideas shaping our world.
I engage regularly, enthusiastically with the tech sector and some of these big players in AI.
Find That's Business with Alan Kohler on the ABC Business Daily feed, on ABC Listen, or wherever you get your podcast.
It's been a long ordeal for those who embarked on a cruise across the South Atlantic in early April, and it's not over yet. Ships' passengers are being repatriated across the world after potential exposure to hantavirus, which caused the death of three passengers. Among those heading home are four Australians who will soon be placed in a quarantine facility in Western Australia. Today, epidemiologist Raina McIntyre from UNSW on everything you need to know about hantavirus. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Raina, I want to start where this virus outbreak began, because it will give us a real sense of how dangerous it is and how widely it can spread.
A cruise of a lifetime tainted by a deadly outbreak.
Almost 150 passengers were on board the MV Hondius, including four Australians. Three people have been confirmed dead so far.
Passengers are being evacuated from a cruise ship hit by a hantavirus outbreak after it was finally able to dock at the Spanish island of Tenerife.
On Monday local time, the final passengers were evacuated, with officials from the World Health Organization overseeing the operation.
Because of the interaction while they were still in the ship, we would expect more cases.
Now, it's thought the initial victims, a couple from the Netherlands, may have contracted the virus at a rubbish dump in Argentina. What do we know about that?
We can't say definitively where they acquired it. On probabilities, it's likely they picked it up in Argentina because they'd actually been travelling around Argentina, but also Uruguay and Chile since November. But when you look at the incubation period of the virus, and the husband got ill on the 6th of April, that's when he started feeling unwell, the likelihood is that he picked it up somewhere in Argentina. And there's been speculation about a rubbish tip on the island where the cruise set off, but the local health authorities have denied it.
And by the way, that rubbish tip, just to explain that, is a bird watching area. So that's why people would actually go there. A hantavirus, it has been detected, hasn't it, in Argentina before. There has been an outbreak there.
Yes. In fact, Argentina is one of a small handful of countries that has the Andes variant of the hantavirus, which is the only one that's documented to spread from human to human.
Right.
And the incidence of hantavirus seems to have been going up last year. So there was an uptick in cases and outbreaks last year, which was a bit of a warning sign that this could be a risk for travellers.
And it's a virus spread by rats. Just explain that.
Yeah. So hantaviruses typically are first spread from rats to humans through their excreta, both urine and feces, and those can get aerosolized in dust particles and so on and breathed in, or occasionally from touching contaminated stuff, but usually it's thought that it's breathed in. It occurs around the world, but the European and Asian cases of hantavirus are a different hantavirus and they're not as severe. It's right. The Andes virus that causes the most severe illness.
Right. And as you said, that can spread between person and person. Is that close contact is needed, or how is that transmitted?
It's spread through the air, through respiratory aerosols. So it's inhaled. We don't have data to say, close contact. Certainly the last big outbreak of Andes hantavirus in 2018, which was also in Argentina, but a different type of the Andes virus. The Andes virus also has what's called clades. That was a clade 2 outbreak, and this has just been characterized as clade 3, mm-hmm. that outbreak in Argentina in 2018, there were 34 cases and there was very clear evidence it was spread through the air.
Wow. Okay. And in that case of the 34, there were 11 deaths. Now, this Dutch couple, they then continued their travels, of course. They were among the 146 people, including crew, who embarked on a luxury cruise ship which left Argentina on April the 1st. Now, 10 days into this cruise, the 70-year-old Dutchman, who became very ill on board, he died. But alarms about an infectious disease weren't really raised, were they, until a bit later when his wife also became ill.
That's correct. From what I've read, the captain assumed it was, or, you know, he was advised it was a non-infectious death, and he made an announcement to the passengers that someone had died and that it, you know, it was from non-infectious causes.
Good morning, everybody. I'm told by the doctor we're not infectious, so the ship is safe when it comes to death.
He did not raise the possibility of an infectious disease. And so a whole lot of passengers condoled with the widow, who was potentially, you know, incubating the illness or had infection already.
Right. And sadly, his wife also died. And then several other people became ill. And then on the 2nd of May, a German woman also died. Like, what a terrible plight for the passengers. One of them actually posted a video on social media, and you could just tell how anguished he was.
We're not just a story. We're not just headlines. We're people. People with families, with lives, with people waiting for us at home.
Just tell me, Reiner, how does this virus actually cause death?
So the Andes virus causes a pneumonia and cardiac complications as well. So it's a cardiorespiratory syndrome. It's called hantavirus pulmonary syndrome. It's quite severe and, you know, people have difficulty breathing, but you can also get fluid on the lungs, and it's severe enough to cause death in anywhere from 30 to 50% of people with it.
Wow. Oh, gosh. Okay, so much higher death rate than something like COVID.
Orders of magnitude higher.
There are, of course, a number of people who are continually testing positive now for this virus, but there were, as we said, 146 people on board. So is that a large number? Is that looking pretty good?
I think we can expect to see more cases popping up in the next couple of weeks, possibly, you know, even in the next month or two, because remember, there's been other people who've been exposed more recently during medical evacuations and so on, such as in South Africa. There's been healthcare workers, paramedics, passengers on aeroplanes, because some of the people who got infected were on commercial airlines, including the Swiss patient who went back to Switzerland and then heard about it on the news and presented with symptoms. With any travel-related outbreak, there's always the possibility of dispersal around the world. And the other interesting point is that the cases that tested positive in the US and Spain were asymptomatic at the time they tested positive. You know, it's not a super common disease like influenza or COVID, so we don't have as much research about it. But from what's known, we can't rule out asymptomatic transmission, which makes the whole outbreak control a bit more difficult if that's a factor.
So, Reiner, let's talk about the response now. The cruise ship arrived in the Canary Islands in Spain on the weekend to allow those on board to be repatriated. There was about 90 people still on board, and, of course, four of them are from Australia. Another is a permanent resident here, and another is from New Zealand. Now, they will be coming back here, but the Health Minister, Mark Butler, has announced they will have to quarantine for 3 weeks.
As we move through that three-week period, we will take advice from chief health officers about what arrangements should be in place for the remainder of the 42 days. This is probably the strongest quarantine arrangement anywhere in the world, because our government takes our responsibility to keep the community safe and healthy very, very seriously.
is that, in your view, the right approach?
Look, from the time they were potentially exposed, I think it covers the majority of the incubation period. Occasionally, you can get a longer incubation period, sort of up to 8 weeks. It depends on where you're assuming the first exposure was. There's quite a science to outbreak investigation, and of course, we've got lots of highly qualified people doing that kind of thing in Australia who will assess the whole situation and get detailed contact histories from these people. So I think it should be well managed.
And just to note, you know, it is difficult to repatriate these people, of course, because the airline requires a crew, and then that crew will also have to isolate. So it's difficult to get crew members to actually put their hands up for this job.
Yeah, it's challenging all around. And it's a little bit reminiscent of the West African Ebola outbreak in 2014, where there were cases that occurred around the world through travel, and a couple of outbreaks sparked off, including in Nigeria. You know, I think it's going to be similar to that, or to MERS coronavirus, where you can see cases popping up, but I wouldn't expect it to take off and become a pandemic. Firstly, because there's a lot of people saying it's different to COVID. Mm. No one's really articulating why. The reason is that this has a very long incubation period, which gives you time to trace the contacts, quarantine them, and isolate people who may be potentially infectious. And also, although asymptomatic transmission is potentially a factor, it's unlikely to be a dominant factor, whereas in COVID, it's a hugely dominant factor. 50% or more of all SARS-CoV-2 transmissions are from people who are completely asymptomatic, which makes it diabolically difficult to control. So those two factors are not there with this, which is why I think it can be controlled.
Mm, okay, so this will not be another pandemic. It's not like COVID, thankfully. So what do you think?
You can never say never, but I think it's unlikely.
Okay. Unlikely is good enough for me. All right. But, you know, Mark Butler, as we said, you know, quite strict quarantine rules near Perth. Other nations are really allowing self-isolation for 42 days, like the UK, for instance. Do you think we've gone too far? Or is it just better to be?
No.
No.
No. I think Australia has an excellent public health infrastructure and culture and expertise. And, you know, that's the right approach.
So, Raina, we shouldn't be too concerned about another pandemic from this virus. It's unlikely. But are we prepared for that, do you think, for the next pandemic, which we hope, of course, is a long way away? But what do you think? Are we ready this time?
I think it's going to be a lot harder this time, even though we've got lessons that may or may not have been learnt during COVID. The thing that I think might make it more difficult than when COVID hit is that the COVID pandemic itself has created a huge pushback against public health in general, vaccines specifically, and there is a massive amount of misinformation and disinformation about epidemics, about vaccines. There was even social media reports going around saying the Pfizer COVID vaccine causes hantavirus. There's going to be a lot of pushback and a lot of difficulty getting basic public health measures enacted, if it has to be done in a population-wide setting, things like social distancing, mask mandates. There's kind of an emotional, visceral reaction to masks in most people. I mean, I still wear one when I go to the shops, when I get in an elevator. I take a lot of precautions still because I know a lot about COVID and that it's still around and it's actually a really dangerous virus.
Yes.
So I think that's a huge barrier for us to overcome. And the disinformation, it is instantaneous and global. You know, we are being affected by misinformation and disinformation at an unprecedented rate. And I don't think governments anywhere are equipped to deal with that. You know, the stage is kind of full of misinformation.
Yes.
I think that's going to be the biggest barrier when the next pandemic hits.
Wow. And we should be really worried about that, right? About that pushback, because the virus could be worse than COVID. What could we be looking at?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big contenders are influenza and potentially Mpox clade 1, which is showing more adaptation to human transmission, and it's causing big epidemics in countries like Democratic Republic of Congo, where, you know, the majority of cases are actually happening in children. So it's not being sexually transmitted. It looks like it's person-to-person transmission. Those are the two big ones, I think, of what's around at the moment. But you never know. Like, COVID itself came completely left of field when we were preparing for an influenza pandemic.
Rainer McIntyre is an epidemiologist and professor of global biosecurity at the University of New South Wales. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Coney. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.